You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Information Society. I have a huge surprise for you. Chris Anton is here in person, the new vocalist for Information Society, so we're going to have to chat to him with him a little bit more than if you were on the phone. Paul Robb is here. We're getting the mic set up. In the meantime, let's listen to a track from their forthcoming album, Synthesizer. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Digital music. Come on.
all good.
And we're back. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Information Society. Paul, Chris, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
You're very
it's
welcome.
Good to be here.
So I'm going to sort of do this interview in reverse chronological order. We'll start by talking about what's going on right now, and then we'll talk about how you guys got here. What we were just listening to, is that prepped to be a single from the new album?
You know, single choices. I have a terrible track record of single choices. Every song that I've tried to push for a single has been you know, among our least successful songs. So I'm not going to predict singles. I think it's a great single-sounding song. Sounds like Information Society, but kind of 06 style-y. But record companies decide singles.
Okay, well then how do you decide what sounds like Information Society? Because you guys have been through a lot of different formations.
Ironically, I rely on other people to tell me. But not too much, because I put up a couple of tracks on the on our MySpace page, and it's funny because some fans just loved them, and some fans were just screaming in agony.
What do you think they didn't like about it?
Oh, I don't know. Like, there's a couple of real hardcore fans in South America that are just stomping through the internet, bitching about some of these songs, because they don't sound like synth pop, some of them. And, you know, it's amazing, because we still have, if you look at the people who request to be our buddies or whatever on MySpace, we've got, like, you know, thug rappers and, you know, freestyle Latins, you know, Mexicans, Brazilians, and they all, and you know, plain old, you know, we have, like, hardcore goth people, you know, I got a request from
quite a variety.
Some chick in London who's screen name was Little Miss Toilet Slave. And she's, you know, I looked at her page. It's all gothed out, you know.
My favorite thing about the MySpace page is Spock.
There's two Spock and then Spock 2.0.
Spock has to stay.
And they are both our friends, yes. Yeah.
What is the Star Trek thing? That seems to be an ongoing thing.
No, it's just a self-referential kitsch kind of thing. I mean, you know, I haven't watched anything having to do with Star Trek in 20 years, but...
Speaking of which, Cassidy, yesterday, he sent me some video of William Shatner singing Rocket Man.
Oh, right.
But he wasn't really singing it.
Reciting it.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing ever.
Except for that, the Spock Star Trek Cribs promo that they had on G4. You can look at it on YouTube. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like a Spock doll.
Oh, yeah.
But he's like a homeboy, you know?
Yeah, James was telling me about that, too.
Check out the Spock Casa. See how I'm prospering.
You know, you mentioned you have all these different genres that seem to reflect what Information Society is. In fact, in the early 80s, you guys started out with, I think it was Latin hip-hop clubs that really popularized running, right?
Yes, that is correct. You are correct, sir. And the funny thing is that even when we, but I mean, this split, you know, and these all these groups of people have this proprietary idea, you know, what we're supposed to be. And, but even in the early days, we were doing the most bizarre sort of arty electronic music you could imagine. I'm banging on metal, and it, you know, it was like Einsturz into Neubauten meets The Residents. You know, it was very, very avant-garde stuff. And yet, sometimes we'd do like some tongue-in-cheek disco thing or something. We had a song called Disco's Not Dead, It's Only Sleeping. And people took us seriously, and we'd have like hecklers in our audience saying things like, "You're 10 years too late." Thinking we were actually trying to make disco music,
right.
Which ironically, now we are.
Right.
And people are still complaining, like, you're making disco music.
It's like those guys who think Stephen Colbert is a Republican.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
So it's interesting how the different members of the group contribute to the sound. When Kurt went and did his own project with Don't Be Afraid, it was clear that the gothic influence, which you could hear, especially in the earlier Information Society music, was coming largely from him, because that Don't Be Afraid seemed to be very much focused on the kind of Depeche Mode, kind of dark feel.
Yeah.
And then listening to some of your side projects, especially Think Tank, the emphasis was more on dance, beats, electronica. Those two things together made the quintessential Information Society sound, in my opinion anyway. Mm-hmm. And is that something that you're trying to return to with this new album?
You know, it's gotten to the point where I can't even think in those terms. Try to return to, you know, what? You know, every era of the group sounds wildly different, and yet it's all still identifiable as Information Society. You know, I did go through a long scientific search process for a new singer, and Christopher Anton was the result of that search, and one of the factors that went into trying to decide who I wanted to work with was, you know, was it someone who brought things to the table that that I don't bring to the table?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with his work in his earlier group and groups and his solo stuff, it's, you know, he's got that goth thing going on and more of an industrial edge. And, you know, I think Think Tank was also semi-industrial.
Certainly.
I think it makes a good contrast.
It makes a great contrast. And, you know, the thing is, there's nothing underground anymore.
There's so many different elements in these recordings that, you know, Paul gave me some music that was actually a reggaeton beat, and there's just so many different things going on that it would be difficult to classify.
Yeah, I love reggaeton.
Yeah.
Do you think of Information Society as music to dance to or music to listen to? Or both?
Well, hopefully it's going to be dance music that can withstand sitting down and listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody really listen to music anymore? Without,
I think so.
Without,
I mean,
doing,
I know
other
I do.
Things? Do you listen to music
maybe
while doing
nothing?
Maybe
I tap my foot. You know, maybe if I have a pencil, I'll do something.
Right.
No,
but,
and
seemed, yet, on the other hand, people don't play music with singing in clubs anymore.
Well, on
so
that,
it's, you know, it's not like...
On that note, what kind of new music do you like?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I like new music that reminds me of music that I liked in the early 90s.
That's what I'm into, too.
Yeah.
I noticed you played The Killers last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a brilliant song.
Yeah, well, that was, if I recall, that was a remix that I downloaded recently.
Oh,
I like the remix.
That?
No, I downloaded it.
Okay.
I rather enjoy that remix better than the original song.
Uh-huh.
As I tend to with a lot of songs.
Me too. There was that song by, what was The Editors? And there was a remix of it that I thought was so fantastic. It sounded like early New Order. And then, I went out and bought the whole CD, and the thing just blew because it was the remix I liked.
Right.
And then when I got the actual record, it's like, oh, God, this isn't what I was hoping for.
When you guys were an international synth-pop sensation, other bands were also finding, since you mentioned New Order, were also sort of finding this this fusion of electronic and pop was working well for them. I remember when I was listening to Peace and Love Incorporated, it was the same time I was listening to New Order's Republic album, for
mm-hmm.
example. And those bands, do you consider them your colleagues? Did they influence your music at the time?
Not as much as you might think, which could have been one of the reasons we kind of, you know, disappeared into our own private world. But... you know, we were surrounded during that period of time. We were surrounded by so many influences, and it was a very, very tough job to kind of screen out extraneous influences. And we had a lot of people around us saying, "Well, you're supposed to sound like this, and you're supposed to sound like that." And you know, you got to make a new record that's. Our manager had this phrase, "dance floor compatible," that became just like a running joke. And then the other one that he used to get this, he used to say, Can you make a song that's more Utah Saints-ish?
I love Utah Saints.
Well, yeah,
but I mean, you can't go out and make a song that's like something else. I mean,
well,
you have to
especially
be
a group like that that's like, it was like a nanosecond blip on the pop universe, you know?
By the time you're done with it, it's over.
Not to mention their big hit was mostly a sampled loop from
Kate
Bush.
Yeah. That was one of the reasons
I
liked that.
Actually, 10 years later, they released another album, which I thought was as good as their first one.
Oh, they did.
In 2000, yeah. Mm. And it's good, but I mean, they're an instrumental act.
Right. Well,
so, I mean,
and
it's
that
a
was, yeah.
Different
there was,
thing.
There was a big tension between trying to be, you know, and the thing is, at the end, the remixes of our music that the record company would put out would have, like, one word from the vocals, and then the rest was some deep house track or something.
Right, so it really wasn't a remix. It was just another song
that had our name on it.
I see that with movies a lot. They call them sequels, but really what they're doing is that someone's given them a script that they've decided to buy, but they can't sell it, so they take a character from a movie, like a monster, you know, from like a Hellraiser movie or something, and then they just apply it to that script and then call it a sequel.
That's called the franchise, baby.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about how you found each other and some of the challenges about becoming what is essentially going to be, I guess, the front man of of an act that's already established.
Yeah, yeah.
How did Paul find you, Chris?
We call him Ripper Anton.
Yeah, Ripper. That's right. Who was that? Iron Maiden?
No. Rob Halford's.
You can tell I know a lot about heavy
Rob
metal.
Halford's group. You know, Cassidy, help us out.
Yeah.
Sheffield Steel, you know. You okay. got another
anyway.
Thing coming. That group.
Yeah,
for God's
sake. One of those groups.
Well, Paul, you said you did a pretty exhaustive search for a new vocalist. What were you looking for, and how did you find Chris?
I didn't know exactly what I was looking for, and I entertained a lot of what are, in retrospect, very bizarre candidates. you know, because...
Was it all men?
Kurt Larson was a bizarre candidate, too. I had a couple of females approach me and say, you know, well, why not use a woman? Mm-hmm. But I just felt like if I was going to do that, I might as well start a new band. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to start a new band. And the thing is, Chris kind of just fell out of the sky.
It was kind of bizarre, yeah. It was kind of a whole surreal deal because actually I know one of our fly-by-night managers had contacted Paul about producing Pseudocypher at one point. That's my original band. A couple years ago, and I'd never talked to Paul though, but then just to me it just seemed kind of out of the blue. I got an email from Paul Robb, and I thought, you know, and I'd never emailed you or back and forth. I'd never talked to you, but it was kind of surreal. It didn't look real to me, you know, saying Paul Robb, and so I responded, and then we ended up having a little meeting, and we talked, and things just kind of. I was taking it one baby step at a time, and uh-huh. it just kind of evolved into this.
And you know, when you found out that what he was looking for was someone to take over Kurt's position in the band, I mean, what were your first thoughts about that? I mean, okay, do you feel like you're filling someone else's shoes or that you're starting a new thing?
I can't look at it that way. Because first of all, you know, nobody could replace Kurt. Kurt did wonders for this band. He was, you know, Kurt is what he did was great. I kind of look like it. I have to approach this more like I'm contributing to a new incarnation. Mm-hmm. of Information Society. That's where I have to come from, because nobody can replace somebody like that.
And any other outlook would probably be unhealthy, you know,
right,
not
right.
good for your mental health.
What am I going to do? But, you
yeah,
know,
no, let's
said, I think there's enough, I mean, there's enough similarities, you know, vocal similarities and other things that make it mesh, I think, pretty good from my perspective. But it's, you know, it's hard for me to say being in it.
And you
what it is.
Naturally, you have an affinity for electronic music with vocals. You
do.
Fronted a Depeche Mode tribute band, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
And so this really isn't your first time kind of emulating another group.
That has been a great learning experience for me because it's just, you know, put me in front of a lot of people, playing a lot of different types of shows. So it's been really instrumental in my growth as a performer, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. But, yeah, and, you know, and I also have my original band that I've worked on for years. And so I've kind of honed my songwriting skills with that.
So is your contribution to Information Society just lyrics and vocals, or?
Paul is all music. I've done a little bit of lyrics. Yeah, a couple
and
of things.
Is it a collaborative process, or is it, you know, you have this job, you have that job?
No, it's collaborative. I mean, you know, I am sort of a control freak. There's no getting around that fact.
Is that something you're known for?
okay, I default.
People would definitely convict me of that if I were to ever.
Well, you also have solo projects. I mean, it would probably come naturally to want to control the sound that comes with the Paul Robb name.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is that this is electronic music. It's not a situation where we get four guys in a room and we start jamming some songs out, you know, and like, try this riff or whatever,
yeah.
whatever guitar playing kind of people do. I have no clue.
No, it's true. I compose electronic music myself, and every once in a while I want to collaborate with a friend, but really all I can do is maybe record a loop of them doing something and then use it, because it's boring as hell to sit around and watch someone
make
electronic music.
It requires a different type of collaboration.
Yeah.
But Chris and I have collaborated in terms of writing on several of the new songs, and it's turned out great.
Mm. And the writing, I mean, are you writing dance lyrics, or are you writing lyrics with sort of content? I mean, Information Society isn't necessarily known as like a message band. You know, it doesn't have like a political bent or anything.
I beg your pardon.
I don't mean that in a bad way at all.
Some of the deepest lyrics in pop music history. No, but you know, our lyrics are better now, I think, than ever.
You know, what's interesting is that I like the way you work it. you gave that to me to write some lyrics on. So basically, Paul wrote the chorus, and I wrote the verse, right? Would you say that? Mm-hmm. And he gave that to me, and he said, okay, this should be about either, what was it, about craft work or about somebody watching a robot dance kind of a thing.
I want a love song to a robot.
Someone falling in love with a robot. So I opted for that, and I took it. I took it really seriously, and I started doing some research on androids and different things, and got a lot of terminology out of that. So if you listen to the verses, a lot of that is a result of me doing some research. And I don't usually write that way, so it was really great. It was a great experience to do that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the first song that I can think of from Information Society that was directly about dancing. The lyrics were directly about, you know, I'm watching you dance, you're dancing this way.
The thing is, the verse is really more about a guy, like, analyzing his own intentions with a robot.
The verses are creepy. There's no getting
out. I know. I freaked him out. I flew my freak
flag on that. But no, creepy, good creepy, though.
Yeah.
Good creepy. And then it's so funny. It's a great contrast between the creepy kind
of... It is, and then all of a sudden...
You know, what do they call it in Japan? Otaku, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
yeah.
Otaku is like just these obsessive kind of men, adolescent men that just sit in their room. And it can be applied to any type of subject, you know.
Oh, I see.
And then the sort of like the faux sort of party hardy kind of chorus. Unfortunately, I did not bring that track with me.
I was just going to ask if we had
It's still up on MySpace.
It's up on MySpace, yeah.
Yeah.
Which you guys are using as your main website right now.
Yeah, while our other website is being constructed.
Right, so that's myspace.com/informationsociety.
Yes.
Now this idea, this fusion of romance and technology is a theme, an ongoing theme in Information Society music. I mean, from the beginning.
The main theme, yeah.
What went wrong in your life, Paul, that made you pick that as a theme for your musical expression?
Everybody knows that thwarted love and unrequited love and broken love is much more interesting to sing about than successful relationships. I am a child of the media, and I find that to be a double-edged sword. And so as our relation, you know, you have a relationship with technology and a relationship with media, and I think those two subjects dovetail together very nicely.
Why don't we go into a track that you did bring? Do you know what order they're in on the CD? We played it back in the day.
If you play track two, I believe you will hear a song called "Can't Get Enough."
Okay, well here's a peek into the new album. You are listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. My guests are Paul Robb and Chris Anton, Information Society. Stay tuned.
Surprisingly so.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Information Society. So we were just talking during the break about your experiences touring and how you guys are extremely popular in South America, and that seems almost inexplicable from an American standpoint, because there is not a very distinct, noticeable Latin vibe to Information Society. In fact, quite the opposite. If you know, Latin music is sort of known for being sort of free flowing, and electronic music is known more for being, you know, technical beat structure. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What is it about Information Society that made you guys so popular in places like Brazil?
Well, I mean, we started being popular in the South Bronx, and that was, you know, mostly Latins, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, you know, it's the what they now call freestyle used to be called Latin hip hop, and they saw running as one of their Latin hip hop anthems. And I can't explain exactly what it was that touched that nerve, but it has been true throughout the Latin world, and you know, even, I don't know, is Brazil a Latin country? I think it is.
Part of Latin America.
All of South and Central America, Spain, Portugal, you know. And, you know, like I was saying off the air, all of Latin and Hispanic North America, too. Mexico, Texas, Miami, L.A., South Bronx, New Jersey. It's all there, and I can't really explain it, but it seems normal now.
I think if you have the Brazilians on your side, it's a compliment. I mean, I think some of the greatest music in the world comes out of Brazil, and recently a lot of really good electronic music is coming out of Brazil,
too.
Well,
I mean, check it out. You know, they call this funk carioca. That's the new big thing out of Brazil. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's like it's basically back to roots freestyle or roots Latin hip-hop, except that they rap on it now instead of singing sort of a romantic melody. But, you know, or they call it Baile Funk or Rio Funk.
That's something you guys have never done, is the white boy rapper interlude that seems to be a prerequisite for most music on the radio.
We actually have done that, but you will never hear it.
Oh, I see.
Because it was, we're talking like 1982 here. We used to have a song called Growing Up with Shiva, which if you're obsessive enough, you could probably find a recording of somewhere on the web. And there is two sections in that song where a certain member of Information Society raps.
Really?
And it's second probably to the How Long video is the most embarrassing documentation of my musical output. but remember, it was 82, so the rap models in those days were Grandmaster Flash and Sugar Hill Gang. So, but it's still mortifying to listen to.
Yeah, Paul knows that I can't rap.
So he hasn't asked you to do that.
I try.
No. As much of Information Society's music that was done in the 80s, I would say as much of it was also done in the 90s. Do you think there is such a thing as an 80s band? I mean, obviously music made in the 1980s is technically 80s, but is there such a thing as 80s music?
Yeah, there is. I think there are classic 80s bands, but we're not one of them. See, that's the bummer, because we don't get on all the 80s compilations, and then when people 10 years from now start doing 90s compilations, we're not going to get on those either.
But you're often referred to as an 80s band.
I know we are. Yeah, we're kind of like the last band of the new wave. You know, the new wave's last band is what we were.
And what defines new wave as separate from, you know, the hair metal and stuff like that?
Well,
new
wave happened when I was in high school. It was the first wave of pop music after punk. What it meant to us was anything goes, all rules are off, geeks and nerds are allowed in pop music now. And we looked at people like Devo and the B-52s and Gary Numan and 100,000 other bands that no one remembers now, including a lot of great local bands in Minneapolis. And we said, God, look at all these weirdos and losers. They're all rock stars now. If they can do it, we can do it. And it wasn't these, you know, like the pop music before that was music that was listened to by people who I was afraid wanted to beat me up and often did want to beat me and us up.
But
people
deep down,
like
they're really
me.
Sensitive. There are no tough guys. There's no tough guys in music, because tough guys don't write poetry. That's
well,
the rule.
I guess so. But the kind of, it's not the people who made the music. It's the kids who listen to the music.
Right.
Kids who are listening to AC/DC and REO Speedwagon and these kind of bands even the pop country of those days.
Really? REO Speedwagon?
Well, they called it REO Fagwagon, but they still listen to it because the chicks dig. But anyway, right. that kind of rock, metal, corporate metal kind of stuff from the late 70s, those were the kids who wanted to kill us. And so New Wave was like Revenge of the Nerds, really. Mm-hmm. And then techno, you know, kind of revenge of the Euro white people again, you know, uh-huh. after like trying to fight back from too much funk. And so, you know, it just all goes in a circle.
And you guys really embraced that role as the dork gods of music with the cardboard guitars.
Oh, yeah.
and
now
the
it's almost de rigueur that if you're going to be a rock star, you have to. The main subject has to be complaining about how misunderstood and what a victim you are. You know, uh-huh. It's not like the 70s where rock stars were sort of alpha males. Only in country does that happen anymore. Even like the most noisy death metal or goth or whatever, it's all about how sensitive I am and it's so hard for me to deal with my life. And, right. you know, it's all
point.
About, you know, it's like therapy rock, right. Even rock music. Has now adopted what New Wave brought, which was like, I'm a weirdo and I'm proud of it kind of thing.
Right. So
that's what I like about the tracks we've been working on. I don't think there's really that pretentious factor going on.
Yeah, there's very little whining.
Right.
It's very little, I'm different like everyone else who's different like me.
Yeah, that's why I'm selling 10 million records, because I'm such an outsider.
Exactly. Can you describe, if it's something that can be described, the journey from... You know, being in Minnesota with your friends and making music that you enjoy and just having a good time, to being this phenomenon, this thing, this international thing with producers telling you what to do and fans just going crazy. And
no, it can't be described. But I will say we were always one step behind, you know. And there was a lot of complaining and grout. You know, the thing is, we were the most unworthy and unprepared band to ever make the top 10. We didn't practice, we didn't rehearse, we didn't take dance lessons, we didn't take acting lessons, we actually did, Kurt and Jim actually both took vocal lessons for a while, but we styled ourselves. I can't believe that the record companies and our management let us wear what we wanted to wear. I look back on some of these photo shoots and say, God, my God, why couldn't they have put us in some clothes?
So is that your choice? The sleeve to the Hack album in those outfits? Was
oh,
that
yeah.
you?
That was all yeah. us. And that's why it's so strange. But, I mean, there is that aspect that Jim Cassidy was just reminding me of yesterday. There's always been a sort of do-it-yourself indie punk vibe about Information Society, and I think that's one of the reasons people are so... our fans are so passionate, because it's not so slicky kind of synth poppy, you know. There's also like well, that's why we call the second record Hack, because it's like a hack originally meant a piece of software you kind of construct, improvise, mm-hmm. you know, to accomplish a specific goal, and that's what we did.
Tell me about the other members of the band. You have Jim Cassidy was one of the original members of the band. How did you get him interested in giving it another go?
I got him. It was a step-by-step process of making... He's a very excitable man, and I knew if I could just kind of reel... I cast my lure, and I hooked him, and then I reeled him in slowly. But, no, you know, he's wanted to do something for a long time, and, you know, time just seemed right.
And you also have a new keyboard player.
We do. We have Sonia Myers, and who also was the result of an exhaustive search. And it was important for us to get a chick back in the band, because I like the energy that a female member brings. And Sonia's a brilliant player and a really good singer and totally hot. And also very, very weird and funny.
Yeah, she's funny.
Well, good. Sounds like she'll make a good contribution
yeah,
to the group.
Yeah.
I've always been curious.
Oh, I have an announcement to make too.
Please. What's up?
Ed Wozniak, Wazo, the Terminator of the drums, is online to play some shows with us. He
oh,
was
great.
Our old live drummer from back in the day, and he's back on board. That's what I've been told.
Why don't we talk about that now then? You guys are going to do a tour or something?
No, we're going to do just a few sort of semi underground dates, although they're not that underground anymore, just to kind of assess things get back in the groove and try to see what Chris Anton does when he's faced with 10,000 screaming Brazilians. And we're going to do a date in São Paulo, or a Sampa, as they say, in August. And before that, we're doing a night in up in Portland at the Crystal Ballroom. And we're doing a little freestyle extravaganza in Sacramento the following week in August.
Is the anticipation that you're going to find your old fans again, or are you going to build a new fan base?
No clue. Maybe a combination of both. Hopefully a combination of both.
So here's something I've just personally been curious about. I was a big fan of Peace and Love Incorporated, the album, and it seemed like that... I mean, I'm talking to you right now, so obviously it didn't kill Information Society, but it seemed like that made you guys, that experience made you guys sick and go away or something. And I always kind of blamed grunge for it. Because
I blamed grunge too.
Really?
I specifically blamed Pearl Jam and Nirvana.
Me too. I was working in a music store, and I distinctly remember seeing Peace and Love Incorporated in the clearance bin. Like right after it had come out.
Really?
And thinking that this is absurd, because I loved that I was playing. I mean, I was blasting Going, Going, Gone out of the back of my mom's 88 Isuzu Trooper, you know. Perfect. I was that guy at high school.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay, I'm much better now. But definitely it seemed like it came, you know, Peace and Love, you know, was on the Billboard dance charts, and it came and went, and nobody seemed to notice.
We couldn't get MTV to play it. I mean, the thing is, we were a victim of changing tastes, I think, and especially changing tastes among radio programmers. When we first came on the scene, we were alternative. Alternative music meant what New Wave had morphed into. We used to laugh about the term alternative. Like, alternative to what, you know? Because all the top radio stations in every market were so-called alternative, you know. And then there was the energy format that was basically built around us and bands like us. But then, you know, come the early 90s, people got tired of that kind of music. And
there was very little electronic music with vocals following 5-6 years at least.
That's right. And I think it would have been very difficult or impossible for us to survive through that in America, you know. I mean, I see us as having... we had a couple of choices. We could have done what Depeche Mode did, which was pretend that they were a rock band and, like, pose on their covers with guitars and stuff, cowboy hats. I mean, obviously it worked because they're millionaires and I'm not, but we couldn't do that. I could not put on a cowboy hat and fake holding a guitar and
I
stuff
think you
like
could.
That. Or we could have done...
I've seen you fake holding a guitar.
Yeah, everybody's seen that.
Like, we could have done the Erasure thing and just proud, man, we're a disco band and that's all we are, and prance around in tutus and stuff like that. And they survived that period, too, with a huge fan base intact.
I noticed Pet Shop Boys seemed to change, around that same time, seemed to change the intention of its lyrics to gear directly towards a predominantly homosexual audience. And that seemed to keep their
music alive. Well, because they could rely on that market. And we didn't know what market to rely on. It certainly wasn't the alt kids or the goth kids, because all those kids suddenly went to grunge and grunge-associated type styles, which I don't even know what they are, but whatever.
It's ironic, because Peace and Love, to me, sounds really solid.
It is a solid record, but it
really
was too
compact.
Little too late. And what I decided to do is I said, well, I like techno. That's the kind of music we always used to do. We started out in 82, 83 making what essentially became called techno music. And so I said, you know, we're going to make a techno pop record. And that's what we did. And clearly it was too little too late. And, you know, we made the best video of our career for that record. But because of demographics and tastes and stuff, we got added to MTV, but they never played it. And that was kind of that was the writing on the wall at that point.
Have you had to... you were saying that...
sadly ironic that our last single was called Going, Going, Gone.
Right. I thought of
that. That was
too.
Not on purpose either.
Right. You could, you know, in retrospect, could have titled the album Too Little, Too Late.
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
It would have become like a... I mean, it is a cult classic in a way, but... for some reason, even with the fans, I think it didn't have the staying power that Hack did. Hack seemed to be an album that changed the way, at least in my book, the way people looked at synth pop music.
I agree, but I will tell you this, that even though Peace and Love Incorporated was considered a flop for us and for our record company, most acts new acts today, if they sold what Peace and Love Incorporated sold, they would be, you'd see them on the cover of AP and Spin, and they would be really considered really hot.
Right, right.
So, you know, everything's relative too. It was so, it sold so little that we ended up getting dropped because of it, and yet now any new act would just be thrilled to sell that kind of.
You mentioned before that you couldn't believe how Tommy Boy let you guys, you know, dress how you wanted to dress and, you know, be the dorks that you were. Was there ever a struggle for creative control? Did they tell you how to, what kind of music they wanted to hear from you? And was that, was there any friction in that?
Well, yes. And not only that, but we actually had two record companies. There was Tommy Boy and there was Warner Brothers. And we had A&R people at both labels and marketing departments at both labels and presidents at both labels. And and not only that, there was fights, as everyone knows, between the band members for what the direction the band could take. So, you know, I mean, that's why you have a record like Hack that's, you know, it's a tapestry of
instrumentals and samples. Yeah. And well, tell me a little bit about using samples as an instrument. It's interesting that you mentioned Utah Saints before, because as a techno act, they're one of the ones that are particularly sample heavy. They use samples as instruments. In fact, they even have a little thing in one of their album sleeves describing that. But Information Society was doing that even before that, and before it was popularized, I think.
Yeah, we were. We just thought it was really cool. I remember the first time I called a music store to see if they had a sampler in stock that I could come and try. And so I said, do you have any samplers? And the clerk on the other end kind of paused for a minute and said, well, we're not giving anything away for free, if that's what you mean. So that's how early on board we were.
Right.
And it was just another creative outlet. Now it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, whatever. It's just another aesthetic choice. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fans like us for the samples and the humor of the samples. And I think Think Tank kind of took that philosophy about as far as you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just want to get back to the songs more. You know, there's still some samples in the music.
Did you consider Think Tank to be kind of an extension of Information Society, or was that just about Paul Robb?
Oh, yeah, it was just about me. It was just what I wanted to do at that time, and I had the time and the resources and the freedom to do it. So, you know, the Think Tank record was kind of my version of Don't Be Afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I was attempting to follow on in the Information Society mold at all, obviously.
But it was interesting. I was listening to Think Tank at the same time that I was listening to Don't Be Afraid, and I was seeing this separation of the electronic influence and the darker goth influence, and it occurred to me, it made me think, where it must have been Jim Cassidy that was the James Brown influence, because there's a heavy James Brown influence in the first album.
That was actually more. I mean,
but it turns out that I was doing some reading last night. It turns out it's actually a big influence on you.
See, Daddy loves James Brown too. He probably listens to JB now more than I do still, but.
And again, that's an interesting combination, James Brown and electronic music that people don't really think of. You listen to something like Get on the Good Foot, and that's a techno beat, I think.
Oh, yeah, and it's not only that, but it's James Brown was the forerunner for, you know, a lot of the breaks in early rap were James Brown. And in our songs, too. You know, we used to, you know, Something in the Air on the first record was basically an unpaid-for sample from The Payback by James Brown.
And, of course, Make It Funky was almost almost like a joke about funk music, because it was an unfunky song. Chris, I want to know about how much work you're going to put into Information Society, and you know, do you hope to shade the future albums with your influence, with your taste in music, or are you just sort of along for the ride now to see what's going to happen?
No, I like to bring, you know, as much as I can to the table. You know, I like to. I think what we've done so far is great. I'm not really expecting, you know, more than what we're doing, and I'm trying to really just take it one small step at a time, and then let's see what happens with it.
Are you excited about the upcoming shows?
Oh yeah, it's going to be great. I'm thinking of it as it's going to be a big sing along. It's going to be fun. Yeah,
and I imagine you'll be you'll be getting Chris Anton fans now too, because you're up there as yourself now.
We'll see. I don't.
It seems like in this. I mean, this isn't an Information Society tribute band the way your 101 was for Depeche Mode.
That's actually a big relief. You know, I wouldn't, because I can go in and I can be myself. You know, I'm part of the band, right, Paul?
That's right, baby.
So I can go in and just, you know, whatever it is, who I am, I can go out
whatever
there.
Whatever the hell you do, whatever that's what you're here to do.
We're all still trying to figure that out, but yeah, we'll get there. No, it's I think it's going to be great.
Well, cool. Why don't we listen to another track from the new album, and we'll come back, chat a little bit more. We have just a few more minutes left in the show. So cool. You're listening to Information Society on Is Good on killradio.org.
Treasures that I kept for so long. Treasures of
we're back with Information Society on Is Good on killradio.org. Paul, how many times has, in an interview, has someone asked you, you know, what's on your mind?
Very rarely, actually.
Everyone, I told people I was going to interview Information Society, they're like, say this, I want to know what you're thinking. There's some things you can't hide.
You got to ask it like James Kirk, though.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try because I won't sound good. But.
So during that song, we were talking about remixing and sampling and so forth. And I was saying that I think a lot of these new songs are particularly remix fertile. I mean, it sounds like something like, oh, I could picture a remix in one direction or another. So just tell the audience a little bit about...
Well, shockingly, there's already been... I put a song called Runaway up on the MySpace site for less than 24 hours. And then I pulled it back down because I just wanted to, you know, tease some things about different songs and stuff. And within a week, there was a remix of it on the internet. Mm. And
really?
Yeah. That that kind of blew my mind. People, you know, but remixing has become so democratized. Everybody does it now. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. You know, any kid with GarageBand or whatever can do remixes. So that's why we're going to do the InSoc Beat Mutation Syndicate on our website. And we're going to have downloadable splits of the, you know, pertinent tracks, vocals and whatever for different songs. And anybody who wants to can download them and make a remix out of them and then upload it back to the site. And if there's some really groovy ones, we'll put them on records, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll be...
It's not the newest idea in the world. People have been doing remix contests and stuff for a while. But I love that idea. And I want to hear what people do with the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about remixing is, you know, it's, especially if... I love it when a band I like is remixed by another band I like.
Yeah.
And you can hear both of those influences.
Yep. Mm. It's cool.
Do you know the group Hard Floor? Uh-huh. Sort of like the pioneers of acid house music. They, uh-huh. You know, they just opened a MySpace page, and you know, I found them there, and they're a good example of a band that no matter what they remix, you know that it's Hard Floor remixing
them. And that's cool.
MySpace has been a really interesting thing for bands. I don't think I would have been able to just go ahead and contact some of the people that I've had on this show, like Ozo Motley and DJ Newmark from Jurassic 5 and Information Society, mm-hmm. Without being able to directly send a message to a MySpace page. Because when they're first started, it seems like a lot of them are actually run by the people actually in the band.
Yeah, well, the internet has had that you know, that effect in general, and MySpace and other sites like that have magnified the effect even more. And I think it's a great way. You know, I mean, there are fans that I've never met, I don't know who they are, that communicate with me regularly now. They're my new best buddies, and, you know, it doesn't take too long, it's not intrusive.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly better than getting something in the mail or having someone show up at your house.
Yeah, or someone who wants to talk on the phone or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I chit-chat with these people, and, you know, and it's great.
It's really changed the whole formula. You know, there was a site, mp3.com, a few years back that was kind of the same idea, but for exclusively bands. And this is kind of... you know, jump that idea and just totally taken off with it.
It kind of normalizes the ability to communicate between bands and people who are listening to the music. It doesn't makes it less kind of queer and uncomfortable.
Hmm.
You know, because there's not so much pressure. People come back to your dressing room after a show or something and they want to talk to you and they don't have anything to say. They just want to say, what's up?
Right.
You know, how are you doing? But there's this social pressure suddenly and it's like you have to perform. But on MySpace, it's like whoever wants to send something, you know, say people, you know, people bitch on there too, you know, and then I just delete it. But that's the other great thing about the internet.
Right.
What was the moment for you where you decided, you know what, I'm gonna keep Information Society alive. I'm gonna do it again. I'm gonna do it my way.
Yeah, we played a show. The three old timers played a show in New York last November, and it was fantastic. Big venues. It was like the old days. You know, it was all these dance. You know. Acts and you know when that first bass note from Running came on, everybody, this is like 14-year-old kids, they knew the song. Hmm. And it was great. It was energizing.
So that was really encouraging for you then.
Yeah. I talked to Jim Cassidy after that and I said, I think I want to do something. He's like, nah, I'm, don't count me out, I'm not.
Well, yeah, I remember,
I can't do that.
I remember reading on the what was the official Information Society website a while back, right when Don't Be Afraid came out, and Kurt's explanation about, you know, where the band members had gone, how you had gone on to do music for film and TV, and and James had left the music industry. And that was pretty much all he had that was said about it. So, you know, it was like, well, something really bad must have happened to make him give up music.
Well, yeah, something bad did happen. He was in the music business for 5 years. And
just but, exhausted him, huh?
I'll tell you something else that's really weird about the internet. Like the Wikipedia phenomenon, there's like the article... There's articles about all of us there now, and it's completely up to date. I'm like, who does this stuff?
Yeah, I was surprised to find they reference synthesizer and everything.
James Cassidy. Yeah, exactly.
Wikipedia is a bizarre thing. The fact that it works.
It actually does work, because I was gonna like, in the Information Society article, someone pointed that out to me about 6 months ago, and I was all kind of like, well, this talks about Kurt too much, and like has 10 paragraphs about his car and things like that. You know, like, I have to correct this. And suddenly, through the magic of the internet, now it's like someone has people update it all the time, and it's a great concept.
Yeah.
Years from now, when you guys do something, you know, crazy like a box set or something like that about the history of Information Society, the years between Peace and Love Incorporated and now, I mean, do you consider Don't Be Afraid to be part of the story of Information Society, or is that really Kurt's project with the name Information Society?
I don't know. I mean, people, you know, there are Kurt fans who are probably sitting home thinking, well, this is just Paul's project with the name Information Society. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, hopefully the
and Jim's.
Right.
Right.
Right. But, you know, hopefully that the life of the project will extend to the point where, you know, it'll all be kind of irrelevant, and people will say, oh yeah, I remember this one, and that's when Kurt went off and did it, and remember this one, and,
right,
you know.
So it'll be all things Information Society-esque will become part of it.
Yeah, it's part of the canon. I mean, we used to talk about how we wanted to be a collective, and we wanted to do various projects in various media, and have people coming in and out, and ironically, it has become something like that now, and I'd like to make it more like that. And I think that I will.
Well, good. That seems like a good note to end on. Are you going to be working on a lot of new music? Are we going to see, let's say this synthesizer is received well, is there going to be a follow-up project soon after that, you think? I mean, is that your plan to do this on a regular basis?
Yeah, I gotta you know, we got to find a way to pay Chris Anton in something other than blow and crack.
Hey, you gave me a case of Rockstar.
That's
my only vice.
So yeah, well, you know, we're on into the sunset. It depends on how the record is received, if it's received at all. You know, we'll see what happens with these shows, and you know, all full speed ahead.
Well, Paul, Chris, it's been a real honor to get to talk to you and talk about Information Society with you. I really appreciate you coming in.
All right, thank you.
We're gonna leave with a bootleg rare track that Paul was kind enough to bring in.
Yeah, I gotta set this one up.
Yeah, please do.
During the summer of 1984, the band was dead. Kurt and I were living together. All our girlfriends were gone, and we were so depressed. And we said, let's do one more concert under the name Information Society before we quit forever. And so we put up posters around Minneapolis that basically said, oh yeah, the headline of the poster was, "Insuck, we're no fun." And then under that, we had like a buffalo head holding up an Oscar. And then we had this long handwritten diatribe about how nobody liked us and all our equipment was broken and our girlfriends were gone. And then we played this concert. And this next piece is from that concert, and it's our version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which is a perfect thing to play in the middle of June.
Sounds good to me. My guest has been Information Society. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. If you want to download this episode later in the day, go ahead to www.myspace.com/thisisgood, and I'll make sure there's a link available. Thanks for listening.
This is our slow dance for the evening. We decided we'd slow down this hectic, wild, wild rock and roll pace and play something that has a little holiday flavor to it. So we're going to perform the InSock version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. You better not cry. You better not pout. You better not shout. I'm telling you why.
He's coming. He's coming.
making a list, and he's checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty and nice.
He's coming. He's coming. He's coming. He's coming. He's coming.
He knows when you are sleeping.
He's coming.
He knows when you're awake.
He's coming.
He knows when you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sake.
He's coming.
Knows.
He's coming.
He knows.
He's coming.
He knows who's good.
He's coming.
He knows.
He's coming.
He knows.
He's coming.
Santa Claus.